In this episode, I talk about, yes, face masks and face coverings. I talked about it a couple of episodes ago, and I want to touch on it again because there have been some changes. What has changed, what hasn't changed, and what we can do with this information going forward. I also want to take some time in this episode to talk about, you know, something I've noticed lately. Everybody pitching tents in certain camps. I think it's related to COVID-19, but not related, and I'll talk a little bit about that as well. So let's get into episode 101.
Welcome to the Safety Pro Podcast, powered by iReport Source, helping you manage safety one episode at a time. With the constant regulatory and workplace culture challenges businesses face, we'll provide you with all the relevant information necessary to achieve a safer, more productive workplace. No management theories, platitudes, or guru speak, just actionable info you can use right away. Now here's your host, the safety pro himself, Blaine Hoffman.
Okay, as mentioned, mask update. If you recall a couple of episodes ago, I talked about masks. And, you know, I've gotten a lot of comments online. I've talked to colleagues, direct message, text. You know, I'm not anti-mask. Let's make sure I clear this up right away. I wear one every day, okay? What I am not for is misinformation. I don't think it serves the public, let alone the workers, well when we give them a false sense of security. Now, I'm not saying we tell them, you know, you're doomed. I'm not saying we go the other way, but let me see if I can clear this up. For starters, I'm talking about the context of the workplace only. I am not talking about the general public. So this is the Safety Pro Podcast, workplace safety. I'm going to keep everything I talk about and discuss in the context of workplace. So masks, face masks, and to a lesser extent, face coverings. We have sort of this hierarchy of controls, and I've mentioned it several episodes ago, actually, how, you know, for safety professionals, this should be easy. You know, when we immediately jump to everybody has to wear a respirator or a face mask, we should be stopping and taking a step back and looking at what other controls can we implement to potentially avoid that or to make them less of a required option. All right, so hierarchy of controls, we know all that. So let's look at the COVID-19 guidance and how it relates to the hierarchy of controls. As I had previously stated, we go to elimination and then engineering controls, right? We go to administrative controls, work practices, general practices, and then last line of defense is PPE. Now, we all know as safety professionals, there are going to be times where you're going to have to layer some of these, right? You're going to have to use some engineering controls and some administrative controls together to get the level of risk low enough that we would consider to be acceptable. The dirty little secret in the safety world that there are levels of acceptable risk at times, right? And then, you know, PPE does come into play here, wearing gloves or safety glasses. Even though we have guards and we have some local exhaust, things like that, we do have areas where we may have to layer some protection, some different levels of the hierarchy. Okay, so I mentioned that masks, they aren't tight-fitting. They do not protect you against aerosolized particulates, and that has not changed at all. As a matter of fact, I have some references to go over here, and I will start with what OSHA says. They have a fact sheet, Respiratory Infection Control, Respirators versus Surgical Masks. I'll have a link to this fact sheet. So in the fact sheet, OSHA recognizes, and this is a quote, "Since there is limited historical information on the effectiveness of surgical masks and respirators for the control of influenza during any previous pandemics, the effectiveness of surgical masks and respirators has been inferred on the basis of the mode of influenza transmission, particle size, and professional judgment." Now, obviously, we've learned a lot during this current pandemic, but what we do know And I'm going to reference this fact sheet one more time under the section for surgical masks. They're used as a physical barrier to protect the user from hazards such as splashes of large droplets of blood or bodily fluids. They also help protect other people against infection from the person wearing the mask. It helps trap large particles of bodily fluids that contain bacteria or viruses expelled by the wearer. Surgical masks are used in several ways, including placed on sick people to limit the spread of infectious respiratory secretions to others, worn by healthcare providers to prevent accidental contamination of patients' wounds by the organisms normally present in mucus and saliva, and worn by workers to protect themselves from splashes or sprays of blood or bodily fluids that may also keep contaminated fingers and hands away from the mouth and nose. That last one is one of the things that we're learning about. If you watch anybody wearing these masks for an 8-hour shift, they're touching their mask, their face, constantly, all day. You know, myself included, you can't help it. As you talk, the thing moves up or down, and you're constantly having to pull it up and adjust it. Well, you know, it's causing some problems in the workplace. OSHA also goes on to state that surgical masks are not designed or certified to prevent the inhalation of small airborne contaminants. These are particles not visible to the naked eye, but may still be capable of causing infection. They're not designed to seal tightly against the user's face, right? So during inhalation, much of the potentially contaminated air can pass right through the gaps between the face and the surgical mask and not actually be pulled through the filter media. And, you know, from mask to mask, there's a variance between their ability to filter small particles, right? And that's based on the type of material used, how it's constructed, the size of the mask itself can also make a big difference, the size of the face of the wearer. They cannot be relied upon to protect workers against airborne infectious agents. Now, another little tidbit here, only surgical masks that are cleared by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration can be legally marketed in the United States because they have actually been tested for their ability to resist blood and bodily fluids, the large droplets from getting through, right, breakthrough, and coming into contact with the nose or mouth or skin. So anything else really is just some layered paper, you know, filter material. And maybe by design, it will achieve that. But if it's not been approved by the FDA, it's not actually or technically a surgical mask. It may just be considered a mask. All right, so that's OSHA. NIOSH also has a YouTube video. It's been around for a while. Most of us in the safety profession have seen this, but I have a link to it just in case you haven't or it's been a while. It talks about the difference between respirators and surgical masks. You know, it's from back in, December 16, 2009. And it talks about these differences. So this is NIOSH. It talks about what it's not really good for and what it is good for. So the long and short of it, surgical masks will not protect you from getting sick if we are talking about aerosolized particulates, right? It's not going to provide very much protection at all. It will help protect against the large droplets when you are in close proximity having to care for somebody, and it's mostly for the wearer. Okay. Let's talk about the Canadian Center for Occupational Safety and Health. They say the same thing. They have a page, you know, the FAQ page, respirators versus surgical masks. It mirrors what OSHA has also published. Talks about the difference between a respirator and a surgical mask. When should workers wear a respirator or a surgical mask? Can you tell the difference between a respirator and a surgical mask? And just some of the differences. Like they have a chart where they talk about the key element, the respirator and surgical mask. So the key element would be like purpose. Respirators protect from exposure to airborne particles. In healthcare, it protects from exposure to biological aerosols, including viruses and bacteria. But for surgical masks, it's a barrier to splashes, droplets, and spit. That was pretty much it. That's all they wrote. They go on to say that, you know, respirators are designed to seal tight to the face of the wearer. Wearers should be fit tested to make sure they are using the appropriate model and size of respirator to get the best fit. And then on the surgical mask side, surgical masks are not designed to seal tight against the face, and that's all they say. Look, I get it, and there might be, as I acknowledged in the other episode, there might be a psychological benefit that somebody might feel better, but that also presents itself with some risk, right? You get somebody, you give somebody a false sense of security and safety, they may expose themselves inadvertently as a result. They may feel like, oh, I can get within 6 feet of people because I'm wearing a mask, or because I'm wearing a mask, I'm less likely to get ill. And they may actually not be adhering to some of the other more important engineering controls or practices that have actually been shown to reduce the potential for infection greater, okay? Hygiene, hand washing, social distancing, or physical distancing, if you will. And also just coughing into your elbow, covering your cough and disposing of that properly, not creating the aerosolized particles to begin with, okay? Now, what about talking? I think it's hilarious that for decades we've known what talking can do by way of spit and saliva. And now all of a sudden we see these computer models that show this, these nanoparticle clouds that you can't detect, but with a some sort of, in CERN, at the CERN, laboratories. And now, of course, you've got a 2.5 mile cloud on these computer models from somebody saying, have a good day, right? I want to talk in terms of what we do know, and then being of a growth mindset myself, which I'll talk about here later, I know I'm open to learning and growing and developing and discovering new things. That's not what I'm saying in this statement. What I'm saying is we know that, staying 6 to 10 feet away, there's new research that says maybe 6 feet's not enough. And it's caused us to look at society and how we socialize in a different way, which I think is a good thing. But I want to caution everybody about like being antisocial and how that can actually backfire in society. But I think it's funny that everything we've known up to this point about just talking in, with a regular voice and being close to somebody, how it's the large droplets that we're concerned with, and that the guidance we have now from the CDC, which I'll get into, really is focused around assuming everybody is asymptomatic. So when I started this episode, I talked about, okay, what's changed and what hasn't changed? Okay, what's changed is we now have guidance in the U.S. that says, all right, if you're going to go out, you wear a face covering. That's actually even less of a protective measure factor than a surgical mask, which is less than a respirator. So when you rank the three, it's respirator, surgical mask, face covering, last, the least level of protection. Why? They want you to catch your spit, the large droplets. It's not going to even prevent the aerosolized particulates from a high velocity, you expelling material at a high velocity, right? Like a sneeze or some coughs. The face covering will not stop that, okay? So if it gets out and it's aerosolized and somebody else near you, even 6 feet away, if we're looking at some of these new videos on YouTube that show these computer models that shows this huge vapor cloud going over three aisles in a grocery store, and you're wearing your face covering, guess what? According to the CDC, they're very clear. Face coverings and surgical masks will not prevent you from potentially becoming infected from aerosolized or small suspended particles in the air. That's not what they're designed for. So why are they saying we should wear face coverings? On the CDC page, as of today, as of the date I'm recording this, because it'll change like last time and the time before that as soon as I drop the episode, but the recommendation regarding the use of cloth face coverings, especially in areas of significant community-based transmission. CDC continues to study the spread and effects of the novel coronavirus across the U.S. We know from recent studies, and they have several here, that a significant portion of individuals with coronavirus lack symptoms, meaning they're asymptomatic, and that even those who eventually develop symptoms can transmit the virus to others before showing symptoms. This means the virus can spread between people interacting, here's the key, interacting in close proximity. For example, speaking, coughing, or sneezing, even if those people are not exhibiting symptoms. In light of this new evidence, CDC recommends wearing cloth face coverings in public settings where other social distancing measures are difficult to maintain. Everybody forgets that part, or just stops reading. Let me repeat that. CDC recommends wearing cloth face coverings in public settings where other social distancing measures are difficult to maintain. Example, grocery stores and pharmacies, especially in areas of significant community-based transmission. Second paragraph, it is critical to emphasize that maintaining 6 feet social distancing remains important to slowing the spread of the virus. CDC is additionally advising the use of simple cloth face coverings to slow the spread of the virus and help people who may have the virus and do not know it from transmitting it to others. Cloth face coverings fashioned from household items or made at home from common materials at low cost can be used as an additional voluntary public health measure. And they add this statement, a cloth face covering that they recommend. They are not surgical masks or N95 respirators. Those are critical supplies that must be reserved for healthcare workers and other medical first responders as recommended by current CDC guidance. And this recommendation, it complements and does not replace the Coronavirus Guidelines for America, which remains the cornerstone of our national effort to slow the spread of the coronavirus. And then they have a cloth face coverings Q&A page. And they talk about, do I still need to stay 6 feet away from people if wearing a cloth face covering? What types of, you know, cloth face covering should be worn? Who should not wear a covering? And why is CDC recommending face coverings instead of medical grade face masks? And they're honest about this. They're saying, look, because they're in critical short supply. But do I still need to stay 6 feet? Yes. Wearing cloth face coverings is an additional public health measure. CDC still recommends that you stay at least 6 feet away from other people. Frequent hand cleaning and other everyday preventative actions as well. A cloth face covering is not intended to protect the wearer, but it may prevent the spread of the virus from wearer to others. This is especially important if someone is infected but does not have symptoms. So there you go. They're saying right here, no, you still have to maintain 6 feet. But if you go to the main page where they make this recommendation, it says, we recommend wearing cloth face coverings in public settings where other social distancing measures are difficult to maintain. And then they go on to say, this will not protect you. It's going to help protect others. Why? Well, because a simple cloth face covering won't prevent certain size particles from getting around it, right? So that's why it's really, so in order for this to work, if you think about it, 100% of the people have to be wearing some sort of face covering. But we know that's not the case. I still go out and see people wandering around with no face coverings on. There are workplaces where the largest store chain out there, I won't name them, And they're making great efforts in protecting their workers and trying to protect the public that need to get critical household goods and supplies and food, things like that. And they've now gone to 100% of their workers wearing a face covering, a face mask. Well, that's great. The problem is, as we now know, if all of the customers coming in aren't wearing them, or maybe half at best, you're not really protecting the worker. It's protecting the customer from the worker in that case, right? But remember, you cough or sneeze into this thing without using an additional covering or into the, you know, elbow things like that. You just wear the mask and you sneeze. The aerosolized, the small particles can still be expelled out through the sides because it's not tight fitting. And now it's out in the air. And now you have some customers not wearing face masks. It's crazy. Look, I think we just need to have a basic understanding of the limitations of these things. And the CDC still continues to create some confusion by saying, well, when social distancing measures can't be achieved, we recommend wearing a cloth face covering. But we also recommend you still have to maintain 6 foot distance because it's not going to completely protect everybody. It's not going to protect you. It's going to protect other people. And it's like, okay, do we wear a mask if we have to get within 6 feet? Well, no, you would wear a respirator. But then again, if somebody coughs and expels some fine particles, your eyes are exposed still, your skin, your hair. Everybody's concerned about this stuff, this virus being able to survive on surfaces. So you would need a full-blown hazmat suit if you really want to go 100% protection, right? And then go through a decon stage. Look, I'm not saying that that's what we should do, and I'm not saying masks don't work. What I'm saying is we have to be careful the message that we send. And when I see, even online, when I see folks say, help stop the spread, wear a mask. Okay, that kind of leaves the impression of all I have to do is wear a mask. And that may not be true. And again, I'm talking about the workplace, right? I'm talking about the workers in the workplace. If you're not exposed to the public and everybody's wearing a mask and you make it a company policy and you send people home who refuse to wear it, which several companies are now, that's doing, I think, a lot better than some wearing a mask, others not. You allow them to wear their own face coverings from home. Some are wearing a mask, which is slightly better. You know, there's still a mix out there, but I think everybody covering their face all the time and still strictly enforcing the hygiene and the social distancing, the physical distance we keep from one another, I think that is where we are going to see some success. I don't see the mask or face cloth face coverings as a silver bullet, and I don't think we should be sending that message. So we should be very clear with our workers, just like we do with all PPE. Forget coronavirus, forget COVID-19, right? Just think what we do as part of our jobs anyway. What are the appropriate use and limitations of this PPE? And we won't steer them wrong. We have to just be honest with them about that. And it is not about my opinion. Remember, I'm not anti-mask. I wear one every day, every single day, okay? And, you know, I do think that it helps. I do think that it helps. But here's the problem. If everyone's saying this stuff is aerosolized, we're in trouble, okay? We're in big trouble because that little paper mask, in those cases, it's not going to help. World Health Organization, just to throw one last one on the pile, on their FAQ page, they still say the question, should I wear a mask to protect myself? Only wear a mask if you are ill with COVID-19 symptoms, especially coughing, or looking after someone who may have COVID-19. Disposable face mask can only be used once. If you are not ill or looking after someone who is ill, then you are wasting a mask. So they do acknowledge that some people can be asymptomatic, but they're still, the World Health Organization is still saying, look, you know, we just don't have enough information to warrant everybody wearing a mask, every healthy person wearing a mask. I applaud workplaces, companies that have gone to 100% face mask. The problem is, can you sustain it? If you're a large employer, you know, the supply chain is, you know, the big question, let alone logistics, getting it there. But can we continue to support this multiple mask per person per day type of approach? So, but I think it's a great effort. Again, I wear one every day. So, and I'm glad to, by the way, happy to. I feel like I'm doing my part. I understand its limitations and its intended purpose. I also maintain the physical distance and perform hygiene like constantly. You know, so we have to be aware of that. The mask does not replace these other things. It's just another little thing we can do. But remember, it's for the large droplets and particles. And if we're that far away, I don't know. I don't know. But here's the other thing. If I'm talking at a desk or a common area and I'm talking and my spit, you know, just from talking hits a surface and then I walk away and somebody else comes, they're still going to touch that. They still, you know, they're not wearing gloves. Okay. But the hygiene and the constant cleaning of frequently touched surfaces in work areas, in common work areas, that's what's going to tackle that part. The mask will help reduce the number of occurrences of that scenario right there. So that is also a big plus. So wear a mask if you can, if you're able. Okay. I'm not anti-mask. I'm just saying, and you know, these folks, they're like, well, you're not wearing a mask. It's, well, what's a mask really going to do? And that's what I wanted to tackle. So what's changed? Not a whole lot. The public guidance has changed in cloth face coverings. Okay. And some states have gone to a face covering of some kind when you go out in public, mandatory. Now, again, we just talked about the limitations and proper use of those things. And I think that, again, in society and in the public outside of the workplace, we may be sending the wrong message there. But in the workplace, as long as we cover our bases, we talk about its appropriate use and the limitations, that will better protect workers than just saying, wear this and everybody will be safer. Now, as I continue to post online, mainly on LinkedIn, and I share some examples of different workplaces doing different things, and I just want to applaud everybody's efforts, I continue to see these individuals, even colleagues, even fellow safety professionals, and it's upsetting that people still find the need to do this, but you've seen this. You'll post a photo, and it'll be a photo of somebody, you know, wearing a hard hat or glasses or you know, something, and you're like, hey, you know, hats off to everybody, all the hard workers out there. And it's just a photo of somebody working. And then maybe there's something in the background that you didn't see. And it's not a big deal. It isn't somebody, you know, hopping on 1 foot, 25 feet in the air on a beam or anything like that. But maybe, I don't know, it's, and this actually happened, by the way, I'm going to give you this example. It was a roll of paper towels sitting on a table in the background. Somebody actually had to point out that, hey, shouldn't that roll of paper towels be somewhere else? I can't even remember the comment. I just deleted it. It's like, oh my gosh, people, if you're a safety professional listening to this, you know, don't be that person, okay? Well, technically those people look like in the photo they're closer than 6 feet. You don't know. The photo, it could be a different angle. It could be, you know, that the main part point of the photo, just look at the post, look at the caption, and participate in that aspect. Don't be the person that has to constantly find something wrong. Keep in mind, this is after I've found something wrong with the way we're communicating masks. I acknowledge this, okay? I'm talking about the fixed mindset of what this is, all this is what I know, and this is all I know, and this is therefore this is going to be the basis of every conversation I have, and versus, okay, what can we learn, what can we do differently? And like I have with masks, I wear one every day. Okay, I'm not anti-mask. I just want, as safety professionals, keeping in line with the purpose of this podcast, which is helping us to develop our skills and the way we communicate safety to others and help us manage safety one episode at a time. I'm talking to other safety pros about how we should and should not be talking about masks, and not that you should or should not use them at all. So I actually had to turn off comments for the first time ever on LinkedIn to a post. It was so ridiculous. Look, don't be that person. Don't constantly have to find something wrong with somebody. I scroll past stuff all the time, and that's a neat little trick. If you just keep swiping your thumb or your finger, that post and that photo will just keep going. You don't have to stop and comment. Now, I'm not lecturing people, sorry if it sounds like I am. But look, as safety professionals, you know, it's okay to celebrate the effort that goes into something. We all know, and we've all been there. None of us, not a single one of us, are without fault. Not a single workplace is without fault, right? even the best employers in the world, it's still a work in progress, okay? Because it's run by people, and people are fallible, okay? And that brings me to my next point. It's related. It's same safety professionals, same group of safety professionals, and I'm not roasting fellow safety professionals, but it's about a growth mindset. If you have evolved as a professional, as a safety professional, to the point where you've adopted this the human and organizational performance approach, and that we seek to understand and we don't seek to blame, and which is what we should be doing, by the way, okay? If you've listened to me for any length of time, you know I subscribe to this. Some safety professionals see that as a one-way gate, meaning it only works downstream. And this is a horrible analogy because I believe we're all on the same level. I don't care if you're a CEO or, you know, the hourly worker that was hired yesterday to clean up. It doesn't matter. You're all on the same plane. But you know where I'm going. I'm going to use this language just to make a point. These safety professionals see this as a one-way gate going downstream, meaning everybody below me, I apply this standard and this approach that most people just want to come to do a good job. Accident really isn't a choice, using air quotes, okay? I'm going to apply that standard downstream, but when I go upstream and I look at middle management, upper management, senior management, I don't apply that standard. It's they're bad. They don't care for their people. They don't support their people. I don't have any of those approaches that work, that we know work the other way. I don't apply it equally going in the other direction. Don't be that person either. I constantly see this, and I'll see the same individual lecture people who are viewing or reading their posts about how they should approach a worker who violates a safety rule or cuts a corner or whatever. And yet, when they talk about companies that are willfully injuring their people or exposing their people to risk, they don't apply the same approach or same language. It's very pointed. It's accusational. They're literally accusing them of willfully injuring and putting their people at risk. And then they strip the personal stuff out. They talk about the company like it's a nameless, faceless entity, okay? If you are of a growth mindset, you would apply that standard to everybody. You would say, you know, well, what can we learn about managers and what they're experiencing in their daily work about the pressures of the job, the pressures to meet a standard, and can something be tweaked or adjusted there? We don't ask the same questions of them. We have a much harsher standard for them. Now, I'm not saying that's good or bad. What I'm saying is the perception we give as professional safety professionals, when other higher-ups and senior leaders see those posts and see us pointing a finger, it's just not helpful. And I don't think it's consistent with what we're trying to tell those very same groups of people, managers and senior managers, how they should be approaching people. Remember, people, forget the title. How they should be approaching people that fail from time to time. Yet when they fail, we give them zero, absolutely zero leeway. So there's my little rant, putting my soapbox away. Don't be that person. I think right now we need, and I did turn off comments. Before I turned them off, I posted a comment, and hopefully this individual saw that. I said, you know, what we need now is probably a little less looking for problems that aren't really there, and a little more celebrating efforts that are being made during this crazy time, wherever we can, actually. So that's it. I just wanted to stay positive on that note. You're not going to find me engaging in negative commentary. If somebody posts a photo of somebody making an effort and I see something in the background that I know is really insignificant in the grand scheme of things, and look, they're clearly trying to make an effort, and they're trying to celebrate the successes. And right now, we'll take every success we can with this, right? You know, positive reinforcement, encourage these professionals that are sharing this stuff to keep on that path, learn from what they're doing, ask a good question about, you know, how hard was that to implement, and how long did that take, and did you find difficulty getting supplies, how did that work for you? Try to learn from each other instead of going the other way. Stop looking for problems, because you know what? You're going to find it. Okay. People that go online looking for a fight, they're going to find it every time. Don't look for a fight. Okay. Support each other. I hope you all stay well and hope you continue to protect your people out there. Let me know what you think. Face masks, face coverings, respirators, wearing these suckers for 10 hours or more a day. It's exhausting. They weren't meant to be worn that long. You're supposed to have breaks in between where you're able to take those off. Do you provide your workers that opportunity to take those off from time to time? And let me know what you think. Hit me up on LinkedIn, and I will talk to you on the next Safety Pro Podcast episode.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Safety Pro Podcast, powered by iReport Source, the all-in-one digital safety solution. For info on how you can request a free demo on all the capabilities of iReport Source to streamline your business's safety management system, head over to thesafetypropodcast.com. We look forward to helping you manage safety on the next episode of the Safety Pro Podcast.